Welcome, everyone, to the Cup of Coffee podcast with me, your host, Tom Dillon. This is being recorded live at our weekly online meeting and broadcast around the world. Today's topic is the top five mistakes HMO landlords make with our special guest, Maureen Ogdu. Before we start, I'd just like to say by way of disclaimer that today is a wonderful discussion, but that nothing said here constitutes financial advice, and you should always take professional advice before earning your hard-earned cash. There may be the odd unplanned swear word along the way as well. Right, let's get going. So the format is that Maureen will speak to us for a bit, and then we'll take questions from the floor. If anyone's got any, I think what will work particularly well today is horror stories about enforcement or similar, so that Maureen can either advise on how we should have probably done things differently, and or just entertain people. And I've got a couple of my own lined up. Good morning, Maureen. How are you? Are you well?
Good morning, Tom. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for having me. Been laughing at all the jokes and stories.
I'm really glad somebody has. I've forgotten. I should before we get into your fine section, I should do. I've got a bio here which I'm definitely going to read out. It says Maureen Ogdu initially trained as a barrister 20 years ago and cross qualified as a solicitor 5 years later. She is a former prosecution lawyer for various regulatory bodies and councils across the UK. So that makes her a gamekeeper turned poacher, or vice versa. Isn't that phrase usually the other way around? Whichever one it is. She's the good one. Maureen is the principal at Rean Anderson Solicitors and specialises in legal services for HMO landlords and business owners covering the whole of the UK. That sounds impressive.
Oh gosh, no pressure.
Yeah, right, back that up.
Okay, well, I said five top mistakes that HMO landlords make. And Julie very kindly said, only five. Yes, you're absolutely right. There's more than that I've picked out the five that are most prosecuted. Certainly when I was working as a prosecution lawyer for various councils, these were the top ones that enforcement officers had issues with. Before I kind of go into what I'm going to talk to you about today, could I just find out if people can put in the chat box if they have one or five or 10 HMO properties, what makes it easier to know your audience. How many people have an HMO? Perhaps a show of hands, actually, because everybody's got their cameras on. So fantastic, great. I'm in the right place. I'm in the right place. Brilliant. So number one, the top one that I put down was unlicensed HMO. So local authorities have now geared up, because obviously during lockdown there was a backlog of work. So lots of them are getting all their paperwork in place. They're sending officers to prepare for enforcement proceedings. For instance, if a letter has been issued maybe a year, 2 years ago, you probably have forgotten about it by now. You may suddenly find a notice drop in through the letterbox, in which case you should be contacting somebody like myself, who's a specialist lawyer. This is what I've done for years, to talk you through it and prepare you for a PACE interview if that's needed in the future. Secondly, do not actually call them directly, because when you do, you may get yourself into more problem if you're not prepared to answer certain questions. I've had clients have said, oh well, I don't need a lawyer, it's just a letter, the notice, I don't know what they're talking about, I've done everything that I'm supposed to do. It's not an HMO. If it's an HMO, then it needs to be licensed. There are about 8,000 HMO properties still unlicensed, as far as I'm aware, Camden Council, one of the boroughs in London, and I'm sure it's no different to other areas. Sometimes people are just generally not aware, and some are burying their heads in the sand. So unfortunately, it will end up costing stress and thousands of pounds in fees, in costs and fines. So yes, please double check. Anybody you know that's investing in that market, obviously as lucrative as it is, it's heavily regulated. We all know that. And the second one is not having gas and electrical certificates up to date. Again, very easily sorted out. If you have a property manager, they should be keeping on top of that. If you're managing the HMOs yourself, then always a good idea to keep a record, or have a VA or somebody to keep a record of when something is due, the expiration dates, and make sure it's up to date. Again, we've seen lots of prosecution happen in those instances. So I'll give you some case studies. It makes it a little bit more interesting. Towards the end of last year, I represented a HMO landlord, owns about 4 HMO properties in West London. Unfortunately for him, because he travels in and out of the country, he had a property manager, but the property manager was not up to speed either. So things expired, he was unaware, and a visit was subsequently conducted by the council officers. Not only did they find that certificates were not up to date, they found other things, and that's usually what will happen. So as soon as they conduct one visit, you end up actually having a lot more issues. So the best thing is just to try and keep us up to date with things as possible, so you don't get into that position. And they're like, I think most people, if you have dealt with the council officers, they're like dogs without a bone. Once they get hold of something, then chances are they'll find other things. I used to prosecute, I used to be their lawyer, so I know exactly what I'm talking about. And I was the lawyer that drafted those charges. You'll never find one charge on the summons. You'll find at least 5 or more. And it used to be the case that fines were a maximum of maybe 5,000, depending on the regulation that's being breached, or £20,000 maximum. Now it's unlimited. So just think, if you have 5 on a charge sheet, 5 times, however, you know, 20 was a maximum, 20K. If it's unlimited, it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money. And the other one is overcrowding, so legal subletting. So I represented somebody that, again, he had a property manager, unfortunately, for whatever reason, they should have been conducting regular inspections to see who was actually in the property. They had, legally, they were supposed to have 5 tenants in there. When council officers visited, they had 11 people living there. So, of course, you can imagine that did not go down well with the officers, and the property manager and the landlord ended up being prosecuted. So property manager can also be held liable. And in fact, there are cases in the newspapers where that has happened. So the company that you're using is quite important if they're managing your property, because if they're not up to speed with things, they could also be held liable. And it's been in the press there. And the next one, which is a big one, breach of management regulations. So I'll give examples of those. Things like having hot water there, having hot water. I mean, these are very basics, really. I'm teaching grandmother to suck eggs here, but they are very important. It could end up costing money and stress for the HMO landlord. For instance, I represented an HMO landlord that had, the property had holes in the wall, dangerous electrics in the shower room. There was a trip hazard in the means of escape. Rubbish was left in the communal garden. I mean, these are very basic things, commonsensical things, but they are still breaches. Damaged fire alarm should have been replaced. Damaged cooker head. You know, so it's very easy to fall into. These are criminal offences. They're not, some clients will say, well, you know, they're civil. I said, no, you're going to get a criminal conviction. That's what it is. Therefore, you should really take care with what you're doing. And then the fifth one is extending properties, HMO properties, there are certain extensions that can be done, obviously, as you're all aware, without planning permission. However, if an outbuilding is extended beyond the requisite, or the permitted size beyond 4 meters, for instance, I'm going to give an example of what I mean by that, then you could face, as an HMO landlord, not just the HMO part of it, but also breach of planning regulations. So to give an example, I represented somebody in February this year. He's actually in the construction trade, interestingly enough. he had bought a six-bedroom property in West London, and the property came with two outbuildings. And he said he was trying to update it, so updating the front bit and the back bit. Unfortunately for him, he added a dormer at the top, which obviously you don't need if it's residential property. You don't really need you don't need planning permission, so long as you keep within the rules. Then the two outbuildings, he knocked them down completely and rebuilt two further rooms. He called them outbuildings, but actually they were being used for residential purpose. So by the time the council visited the property, he had seven people in there. He'd also separated the rooms. He's turned them into self-contained units. So i.e. There's a kitchenette and a bathroom facility in each room. So you can imagine there's been such an extensive change to the property itself that, so they said to him, you need to turn it back into what it was when you bought it. He said, no, I'm within my rights. I haven't done a thing wrong. And this case went on for 2.5 years. By the time he got to me, the case had already gone on to prosecution. It's been listed for court. I was instructed on Thursday. I saw him. Well, we didn't even meet. We met on the Friday. The hearing was on the Monday. So Friday afternoon, I found myself introducing myself to the council lawyer and saying, I'm representing this gentleman. Is there any way that we can adjourn the case for a week so I can take full instructions? Because I just needed to get to the bottom of exactly what's been going on, because obviously it's gone on for so long. He'd said, well, my architect said to me it was complying with building regulations. I explained to him over the phone that building regulations are different to planning regulations, and they're also different to HMO regulations. So he was point blank that he received the correct advice from his architect. So I said to him, okay, well, I'm going to ask for a week's adjournment. Let's have a meet, come to King's Cross and meet me in the office. Let's have a chat about it. He came along, we had a chat. I got the adjournment on his behalf. He didn't even know that he could get that. He was just in a panic mode. Again, when people are panicking, they're not really thinking clearly. So hence the reason why I said that from the outset. Once you get that notice or the letter, anything at all from the local authority, you should be speaking to somebody that knows. Otherwise it could end up you're not doing anything, you're panicking. Secondly, you're going to probably somebody that doesn't specialize in HMO regulation, they're not a regulatory lawyer. Going to a box standard high street lawyer, if they don't specialize in this particular area of work, then you could end up paying more money. So you could end up, maybe obviously you've paid for the consultation, probably paid some money on accounts. I'm just giving you the practicalities because these are things that have had happen to people. And they probably have maybe spent 2 or 3 weeks looking through, reading around it. That's costing you money. And then if they're not completely sure, they may then instruct counsel. I used to be counsel myself, instruct counsel to give their opinion or advice. Again, that's more money that you're having to pay, obviously. And then counsel may come back with his opinion, and then some people may decide actually it's too much to handle. They then back off. I've seen clients do that. So the best thing to do is just deal with it head on. Once you know somebody to go to, don't start Googling people, because you don't, anybody can put anything on fancy online about themselves. You know, so anyway, to carry on about that, this client, he came, I explained all of that. He was arguing with me point blank in the office. At one point he even stood up. He said, no, this is what the architect has said to me. And I said, okay, all right then. We're going to court anyway. So I know you're not happy, but we are going to court next week. We've had 1 week adjournment. So we got to court and I said to him, do not say a word. Let me now handle it. Because clearly 2.5 years that you've been handling it yourself, you have not helped. Because he was just arguing. I mean, the manner of his letters to the council officers were just not very helpful. I know somebody mentioned about, oh gosh, they hide themselves in the ivory towers. I can get you beyond that because I've been in there. So I know the correct people to actually contact, because the numbers they leave on the website really is generic. And it's a case of, you know, who do you even ask for? You probably get through, but you're asking the right questions to get the right response and in the time frame that you need, because you sometimes need to act really quickly and they're just not getting it. They're not, you know, they're gonna function the way most local authorities function, i.e. at the snail's pace. So we went to court and I said to my client, please do not say anything. Do not get into an argument with the council officer. Just be as polite as possible. If they ask you any question, I'll take over. I'll speak to the council lawyer. And you know, because the council officer, clearly the way I was talking to her, she understood that. I said, I've been on your side. I've been on this side of things. And that actually opened up the conversation. We ended up talking about all the prosecution cases around London, outside of London. And then I made her aware that because I've prosecuted, I said, actually, I've been in those shoes, I know. And I negotiated it down to the extent that actually some of the charges were dropped. And also what happens with breach of HMO and breach of planning, some local authorities now are actually going beyond the stage of, if you've made more money than you should have done from the breaches, they could actually apply for what's known as proceeds of crime to the Crown Court, where it goes up from the Magistrates Court to the Crown Court. And that's where we're talking serious money then. Unfortunately for my clients in this case, it went up, but the basis of, it went up anyway, it had to go up. The magistrates had no discretion. However, I managed to negotiate with her the basis of the sentencing, because it's got to that stage, he can't go back. So effectively the Crown Court judge, when he comes to sentencing, he'll take a more lenient view. Nevertheless, it's going to cost him quite a few thousands. So that was that case. That was just an example. There are obviously lots of other cases. You know, the overcrowding one is a big one. The license one is a big one. You know, so if anybody has any questions at this stage, I can pause for a bit. They can ask questions.
Yes, thanks, Maureen. Yogesh has definitely got one, if not 68 questions. But
okay, let me have a look.
what have you got, Yogesh?
Do you want to read the chat or want me to read them out?
You read them out, your question.
I did it one at a time. Yeah,
one at a time.
Yes, please.
One at a time, no problem. Okay, here we go. I can't remember them. Here we go. Oh, how often are people prosecuted for no gas certificate? Do they actually get a chance, or is it once they're spotted, it's too late? And
once they're spotted, it's too late. Hence the reason why I said it's quite important just to keep, if you can keep a log of something, when the date is kind of getting to expiration, just get on and undo it, because there's no, that's gas and electric are the ones that they're not going to take any chances on, because the whole point, I guess, why it's so heavily regulated is because, as you obviously, you all are in properties, you know that people find it difficult to get onto the property ladder, so more people are renting. This is a good time to be a property investor. And particularly HMOs, because obviously they're very lucrative by their very nature. However, this is also the time where enforcement is on the increase. For instance, after lockdown, between June and July, looking at the stacks, there's been more enforcement actions. So for instance, I had somebody contact me a couple of weeks ago. They had an enforcement notice issued a year ago to 2019. That was subsequently, because unfortunately he was this client's based in somewhere out of London, I forget the particular area, but in that instance, because he had not complied with it, he said to me, well, I've changed the doors. I said, no, they're not fire doors. What you have, your electrics need updating. He hasn't done, he said, oh, you know, I had somebody come in. I said, no, you need to really follow what the enforcement notice has said. Because he hadn't done that, they then issued him with a prohibition order. And that was going to expire. And then he said he wanted to appeal. So appealing obviously means going to the first tier tribunal. So it's either way, he's just upping the ante. The more time he's, you know, taking on complying with things, or indeed approaching somebody from the outset, the minute he got that notice, he should have actually been contacting somebody like myself or others that specialise in this area of work to get basic legal advice.
Yeah, sounds like he accidentally upgraded his doors to rabbit hutch doors rather than fire doors, which is a common and an easy mistake to make. Does that help Yogesh? And if so, what's question two?
Question two. So, basically, if they spot you once, you're going to have a criminal record. Is that the summary?
I mean, okay, just to clarify, if they visit and they advise you on things that you need to have in place. And the whole point is they give you time. So the notice gives you time. Compliance okay. within the time period is the most, prosecuted offence, really. The notice gives you time to comply. And if you don't comply within the time period, then you could find yourself going down the route of either they issue a civil penalty notice, which I'm sure people know what civil penalty. Mm-hmm. Yeah, brilliant, Essu. Yeah, John. Yeah, so it's £30,000 fine. That's the maximum that they can. That's an alternative to prosecution. However, I've had clients actually want to appeal the amount that's been issued. For instance, I've had a client that was issued with 20k civil penalty by one local authority. And we successfully got it down to 14k when the case went to FTT. But yeah, 30k doesn't seem very similar to me. I agree with you, Tom. Yeah, I agree.
Why occasionally, I've been late by 2 days to the gas cert, normally because the gas engineer has been a bit slow, not me. Mm. And, you know, does that mean if they visited on that day, I'll end up with a criminal record? Or will they say, oh, you haven't done it, you've got 5 days to get it done, and I won't get a criminal record?
They will give you time, as I said. Give you time. So long as you explain. So, for instance, there are some landlords, obviously people have got their different businesses or professions that they're in, and they're doing property as a second income stream. So you're not necessarily going to be there. You're not going to have the time, unfortunately, to keep on top of things if you're doing other types of work or business alongside property. So it's quite important to have a good line of communication with your property manager or letting agent, so that they then, that's the whole point, you're paying them the commission, they should earn it. They should be on top of what needs doing and when. Hence the reason why conducting those regular inspections are very crucial indeed. But you don't get criminal record just for breach of just because you don't have a gas certificate, for instance. They give you time, so long as you explain to them that it will be done in the next 2-3 days, whenever it is.
Any other questions, Yogesh? You seem very nervous about having a criminal record, but then maybe that's a very sensible thing.
It's not automatic, Yogesh, just because there are processes in place, there are procedures they have to follow. It doesn't just suddenly happen.
Thank you, because I don't want to lose my GMC license, because that's what would happen next if I got
criminal record. It doesn't happen automatically in that way.
That's answered my main worry. The other question I've got is I let out an HMO to a company who then sublet to tenants. In my lease, it says they're not allowed to exceed the HMO maximum. But if they exceed the actual maximum and they don't tell me anything about it and I don't see it, it's not evident to me, who gets into trouble? The HMO license holder or the company? Who does get?
It's a bit of a grey one, Yogesh. I've had cases like that, unfortunately, where landlord, just like yourself, busy professional, just hands the whole thing over to a company to manage. And unfortunately, that I've been, if I wasn't doing what I do now, I probably would have been stung myself. I had to keep on top of my agents for my own. It wasn't an HMO property, it was just a normal buy to let property. And in the end, I took it off them. I said, I'm not going to really, if you're not going to go and regularly just visit the property and see what's going on. Suddenly there were, you know, names that I didn't recognize. I said, well, sorry, that's not the tenant that you told me you had rented out to. What's going on? Can we go there, please? In that instance, Yogesh, what the local authority generally would do would be, initially they would write to you as the property owner, the landlord, and then you would write to them back, and hopefully having taken legal advice, or the lawyer can do it for you, which I would advise that would be a better thing to do, somebody that obviously knows the right thing to say to them. To make them go away, leave you alone and face the property manager. Otherwise, it's a case of the landlord and the property manager will be both liable because you are the HMO and landlord. So in that instance, a good idea is to take advice. Speak to me if that ever happens. We'll have ways around it, really. It's on a case-by-case basis. There is no sort of standard answer to that question. It depends on the facts. As you know, lawyers, we always say depends on the facts. Each case is different.
Thank you. Sorry about the interruption. Last question I've got for now. Planning. Can planning ever end up being a criminal activity? Because you get enforcement notices, but I believe they're all just civil. And as long as you comply with the enforcement notice, that doesn't ever get criminal. Is that right?
Okay, enforcement notice, any breach, because okay, these are all regulatory offences. So offences being the operative word, they are regulatory crimes. They're not the bog standard, you know, the theft or what we all know as criminal matters. These are matters that are regulated that business owners and property owners have to comply with. So landlords, for instance, have to comply with HMO regulations and everything else, really. Planning enforcement, if an enforcement notice has not been complied with, it can be prosecuted under the Town and Country Planning Act. I've prosecuted those matters on behalf of various local authorities. And yes, it's a criminal offence. These are all criminal, they're regulated offences. So it's quite important that people know that they understand that when there's a breach of any regulation, it's an offence. If you get an planning enforcement notice, just contact somebody that deals with that, and hopefully they can make it go away by negotiating on your behalf with the local authority, or advising you on what you can do, such as, for instance, asking for more time to comply with the enforcement notice itself.
Thank you very much. Does that help you in business?
Yeah, I'm very happy. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Yogesh.
That's good. That's good. That reminds me of when my granddad woke up after surgery. And he said to the nurse, will I be able to play the tuba? And she said, yeah, it should be fine. He said, oh, that's good, because I couldn't before. So I'm pleased that we've cheered Yogesh up. gone off topic now, just to entertain myself. Getting back onto topic, we've got at least a couple of people very patiently waiting with questions, starting with Esu, whose partner relevantly is, I think, outside wandering about with a digger. And I think your question might relate to that, Esu. What have you got for us?
It is. We've got a piece of land, and I think it's mental illness more than anything on my husband's part. But he has a habit of collecting machinery. So I must have about 20 diggers and excavators and about 10 boats and things like that. And these are projects that have never been finished. But the land adjoining our house is agricultural land. So we have been served with an enforcement notice here. I've engaged a planning consultant in Shropshire, but they're saying, don't worry about it. And it's kind of worrying me now with listening to you. So it possibly is the same situation as it would be for enforcement for HMOs, won't it?
Yeah, any type of enforcement notice, Esu, one has to look. I think the best thing, because it sounds slightly unusual,
it's got stone and everything, you know, natural stone that can be a building.
I would need to see the enforcement notice and obviously look at the period of time and look at what it is that they're asking you to do, because normally, obviously, the notice comes with a list at the back, presumably.
Yeah, I've seen it's dead thick.
It's quite a long list of what you need to do. So if you think that you're not completely sure why they've issued it or what you're supposed to do, for instance, then I would...
First to clear the land, basically.
The land, does it belong to you and your husband, or is it
but you see, we bought the house, and next to the house there were some 3 acres that we bought, but it's agricultural land, so basically, you know, he's put building materials like natural stone on it and things like that, so there's a massive big pile that he thinks he's going to build a shed up with and things like that.
Okay. And how long have they been there? Have they been there for a long time?
Well, let me put it to you this way. My husband's been building the house for the last 25 years.
Oh, God. Okay. It may well be that you're... I don't know how friendly you are with your neighbours. So obviously, somebody's complained, haven't they? That
there's no neighbours.
Enjoyment of their land or something.
No, it's just farms around us. But if I turn around and show this camera, you'd die 1,000 deaths. But I think it's an illness, personally.
Okay.
Could you claim mental illness?
Sure. I think I'm going to have to see this enforcement notice, Sue. And what authority is it? What council is it?
It's Gwynedd.
Okay. Where is that?
North Wales.
Southeast London.
Okay. I did my bar in Wales, in Cardiff. Okay. I would quite like to see the contents of the enforcement notice, if you don't mind.
Why don't you two?
I can advise you properly then.
Why don't you two make beautiful building materials music? After the meeting, and hopefully Maureen can assist with that. So. That sounds good. We might have actually done something useful, which would be a first for this podcast. So that's we should be grateful for that. I think Julie's also been thanks, Esu. Julie's also been.
Hang on, I just realised this is going to go public as well.
Well, real name's not Esu. Real name's Marjorie. So don't worry about it.
Well, Tom can always edit it.
Yeah, I'll edit it. We'll get it in the edit. Don't worry. Julie.
You can email me later, Esu.
Hi, Maureen.
Hello, Julie.
Hello, really great chat. I'm just really intrigued about this whole area, and I couldn't get a feel for whether or not the people who tend to get prosecuted, are they generally people who are actively seeking to go against rules and regulations that they know about, or is it tend to be people get prosecuted because they've unintentionally broken rules and it's just escalated? Like, what's the...
It's more the last bit, actually, unintentionally, because I think a lot of people are aware that when they're getting into the HMO market, they have to comply with certain regulations. Some may not know fully what they are, or in fact be up to date as they should be, hence the reason why they fall into these issues. And there are some, particularly in East London, you know, I prosecuted for many years in East London, where there are a lot of HMO properties There's lots of Article 4 areas and things like this, Croydon, the other side of London, where people are blatantly breaking the rules. So unfortunately, it's a mixture of both, Julie. I've seen people that are just normal, you know, decent people investing in property. Obviously, everybody's trying to make a living and just have financial freedom, you know, and unwittingly, they've breached the regulations. So that's, in fact, those people are the ones that I really want to target, because yesterday, actually, I was talking to somebody who's a medic, funnily enough. We've been communicating a lot on social media, LinkedIn, and I made a comment on somebody's post, and as a result of that, we booked in a call a few days later, and from the conversation, 20-minute conversation, I was able to ascertain that he'd been burnt, unfortunately. Thankfully, it hasn't resulted in prosecution or anything like that. He's very keen, obviously, to protect himself. And the way I practice law, really, it's more proactive, taking proactive steps, preventative steps, rather than waiting for it to go wrong. Because when it goes wrong, you're in a panic state, panic mode, you're panicking and you're reacting. Let's not react. Let's just take the preventative steps of, you know, preventing it happening ever. Just keeping, it's a bit like, I mean, when people talk to me, I say to them, When any business you start, because it's a business, isn't it? Really, property business, no different to any others. Some people are buying properties in a limited company name. Then they engage an accountant. They should also think of engaging a lawyer that specializes in that market that they're in. So, for instance, when you buy the property, obviously you've used a conveyancing solicitor or conveyancer. It's done. You bought the property. Then the regulatory side of things, if you're thinking of doing all these things to turn into an HMO and going forward profit from the HMO property, then you should then be thinking of engaging somebody that's a specialist to make sure you're on top of it. And your property manager is also on top of it. Mm. Property managers or letting agents, they do what they do. They manage the property, but they're not lawyers. They're not there. They're not the people that are in the courtroom day in, day out. They haven't been from the angle of actually being a pro, because I've seen people crumble. I mean, some people have lost their marriages, their businesses, because the financial stress and the stress itself, it's just tremendous. You know, taking preventative action, you cannot. It's worth its weight in gold. Rather than thinking, oh, well, I've done what I'm supposed to. I've been in property for 20, 30 years. Nothing has ever gone wrong. Well, something at some point will, because HMO regulations, as you all know, it's constantly changing, you know, unless you've got all the time in the world to read everything and, you know, go on this website, go on that website. It's just, you know, it's a difficult one. So I don't know if that helps, Julie. Does that help?
It's really interesting subject. Yeah, no, thank you. That's great.
Yeah, speaking of crumbling, I think I'm crumbling now. We're not even in the courtroom yet, so God forbid, I've been putting any sort of pressure. Have we got any more questions from the floor? If not, I've got plenty. If anyone's got any, then just put me a shout out in the chat and we'll get you in. In the meantime, I wanted to sort of follow on from Julie's point, really, which was about, you mentioned that, you know, if you get a letter or if you get certain communication from the council about one of your properties, then it's often best not to communicate yourself or to get someone to do that for you or to very much plan how you're going to communicate so that you don't fall into any traps that might be set for you. A couple of questions come up from that. One is, well, I suppose every year I get my council tax notice and, you know, I don't immediately call my legal representative. I just thought Derek Devitt's going to keep rolling out.
You know what I mean, Tom. Oh, sure. Enforcement notice or a letter regarding the age of my property.
Well, yeah, right. But that's the thing, isn't it? It's like, as soon as I get even one of those, I suppose the point I'm trying to highlight, which is there's everything from your council tax notice right through to, you know, you've got a court date tomorrow, you need to be there at 9 o'clock and everything in between. And I suppose it's a difficult one for me, for us as landlords, to say which one of these do I need, because I'm gonna need to pay a solicitor if I phone them, maybe not for initial chat, but for any sort of reasonable service. I suppose maybe that's the point, isn't it? If you're not sure, would your advice be give a legal representative a ring? Because they'll always tell you, if it's nothing to worry about, and they probably won't charge you for that.
I was going to say this at the end, but what I do, I offer, I started now since lockdown, actually, because I realised that of course, we all want to progress. We all, and I like to support people that are doing things, really. That's, I'm a very positive person. So I believe in, if I can help without charging the earth, I will. It just builds a very good relationship with people and actually, you know, a long-term relationship rather than here and now sort of thing. So, Tom, what I've started offering is free 30 minutes audits. I offer that to my business clients as well. And people have found them very useful. So talking through, in this case, obviously, I'm talking to a property audience. So HMO landlords in particular would benefit from it, where we have a chat about how many HMOs do you have? How many years have you had it, for instance? Is it licensed? Are you sure that you're complying with the licensing conditions and everything else? Do you have a property manager? How is that going? You know, things like that. Just delve into the nitty-gritties of what you're doing as an HMO landlord. And then at the end of it, you can decide to engage my services or decide, actually, half an hour was fine for me. I'm okay, thanks. That's okay as well. But at the end of it, I usually say to people, you have a choice of getting me on a retainer. So it's a bit like having your insurance policy where people pay on a monthly basis, for instance, and they get my services whenever they need it, obviously within reason. There are packages that I can discuss after the 30-minute conversation. I don't need to go into details here. I'm also doing a guide, which people may find useful, from my prosecution days, and of course, how to avoid making those basic mistakes that people make. Normal people, you know, they're not rogue landlords, as we keep hearing about, that's been in the press, just normal professionals, hardworking people that have got into this market to make money and obviously sort themselves out for their pension and everything else. So that's the reason why I'm very passionate about it, because I've seen people in the courtroom and they're just normal hardworking people, you know, that are investing in property and they've gotten something wrong unwittingly. Just to give you another example, actually, there was a couple that a property lawyer friend of mine introduced me to last April, March time. Yeah. Anyway, they're based on the other side of the UK. Fortunately for them, they were facing prosecution by the local authority, and they'd gone to three different law firms locally to them, and they just did not really get the information they needed, because obviously those were not, they don't really specialize in this type of work. So my friend, who's a property lawyer, they then went to her, because when you hear property thing, you need a property lawyer, but it's a little bit different, as you all can tell now. And she had the file for about 2 weeks. By the time it came to me, the hearing was listed on the Wednesday. I spoke to the gentleman on the Friday, and on the Monday I said to them, you need to come into London for a consultation. Please bring the file with you. When he brought the file with him, you can tell that it's been through three different hands, and certain things he could have appealed, he was already out of time. I picked that up in the half an hour that we're talking, and I said, oh dear, okay, well, we can still do something here, but not a great deal, unfortunately. So I found myself working on the file on the Tuesday. Bearing in mind, I live in London. I had to then travel in the evening, stay in the hotel, and the hearing was on Wednesday morning. So those sorts of things I can, because if you get somebody that's, this is not their area of work, it's going to be quite difficult for them to grasp the issues and be able to actually liaise on your behalf properly with the local authority. They'd be waffling because they have no, and when I used to prosecute, I can tell the lawyers that we're not specialists in the courtroom, because some will even be asking me about certain sections. And I say, is this your area of practice? Of course, you never embarrass another professional colleague, obviously, but it's obvious to me then that it's not their area. I would never, you know, take on work that I'm unable to do. It's just not professional really to do that.
You'd say you'd never embarrass another professional, but I'd like to take the opportunity now to embarrass one of the professionals. No, not really. Not that'd be poor form. Although you mentioned rogue landlords, and I always wonder how I'd know if I became one. Secretly, I kind of fancy it. Obviously, I don't want to be a rogue landlord, which sounds great, doesn't it? Like, you know, women love a rogue and all that sort of stuff. Maybe guys love a rogue too. I don't know. I like rogues, so maybe everyone likes a rogue. But clearly not, to be clear for the podcast listeners, not in landlord circles. Poor idea. You're going to end up money down on the deal. Expensive being a rogue. That sounds like a musical.
You could song. End up being banned from ever being an HMO landlord.
Right. And a pal of mine got a criminal record for something totally non-property related. Really, but really tiny thing. I mean, the law didn't see it that way, but he told me it was tiny. But the thing is, you couldn't get into America for ages. So I had this big wedding planned in America, and that was the end of that. No America trips for him. So little things like that kind of impact it, as well as the fact, as you say, you can't become a Premier League football director or potentially HMO landlord, both of which are crippling for certain people. I've wandered off topic here. I had a good question ready to go there, which was my experience, and this follows on from what Julie was saying, which is, and what you agreed with, I think that the majority of people who are caught up in this kind of thing are ignorant in the original sense of that word, rather than rogue. They're hardworking people who've maybe made a mistake or didn't realise what they needed to do. Looking at the other side of the equation, the councils, in this case, the people who are brought in to prosecute or regulate this sector, my experience is the same, which is, well, they are, by and large, there are some exceptions, but by and large, looking to find a solution that suits everyone and is cheap. They're not looking to take you to the High Court and take your trousers down. Would you agree with that? Or not?
I would agree with that. The whole point, obviously, of having the regulations is to make sure that people live in safe accommodation. Mm. Any of us can end up being a tenant of somebody. You know, I was a tenant before I bought my own property. So, do you know what I mean? So we all want to live in good standard accommodation, and that's the whole point. It's just raising the game. So if you're the ideal landlord, you have all these HMO properties and all of them are fully compliant, you're doing what you're supposed to do, then you will get better quality tenants. It's just, you know, the councils would not even think of every 5 years you renew your license and you just get on with your life, really.
Jump in here, because my experience differs rather markedly from that. I put my video on now because I'm more upright.
Andrew, we can see you now, yes.
Yeah. I was definitely less upright earlier. In my experience, I've been prosecuted by local authorities when tenants have had friends around to visit their house. Yeah, so I've let on a single family let basis to two cousins. Mm-hmm. Who had had friends visiting them. The friends had stayed for a few weeks, and that I was prosecuted as for running an unlicensed HMO, not my tenants who'd allowed the other people into the property. And my opinion about HMO officers, I had a huge amount of trouble. The police came round. They had a warrant to search the premises. Mm-hmm. I got prosecuted by the local authority. The local authority said, you're running an HMO. I'm like, I'm not. Here's the tenancy agreement. The people that are visiting are not paying rent. They're just visitors. There's no evidence that they're paying rent. And in my experience, and this goes for the police as well. I've had the same thing with, you know, traffic. The authorities that are responsible are entirely uninterested in whether an offence has been committed. They are only interested in whether they can prosecute. They're not interested in your mens rea, your intent, your willingness to comply, your keenness to run a legitimate business. The only thing they care about is, can they get you for something? Mm-hmm. And they want to get the person with the money, very, very specifically. The tenant in this case, if there was an offence committed, it was unambiguously the tenant's responsibility, because it was them who was subletting the property. Not a whiff of any action against the tenant. Not a moment's consideration was given to prosecuting the tenant. the only objective was the theft of my assets. That's the only reason any of this happened.
Okay. Andrew, were you represented?
Yeah.
Okay.
I had a lawyer dealing with it. You know, in my view, this is the root of the problem is that this is just the systematic theft of private assets by the state. And I've reviewed a course that was run by Jim Halliburton on this. He did a course on civil penalties, and the situation is the same. So other landlords have reported that they've been prosecuted for a bookshelf in a corridor. They've been prosecuted for a broken light bulb. You know, this system, as I see it, and your experience may differ. It's nothing to do with health and safety. It's nothing to do with legal compliance. It's simply an exercise for transferring wealth from the coffers of from the private citizens who are seen as being wealthy and therefore worthy targets into the coffers of the state. It's just a systematic theft exercise.
And Andrew, I hear. I can see how frustrating it is, and you're no different to other clients that I have. And that's the reason why I said taking the proactive step before anything goes wrong, and also engaging somebody that has been the difference between myself and possibly other people you may have spoken to is I've prosecuted before. So there's a different angle. I'm coming with a different view. Okay, and I've also sat as a legal advisor. So when you've gone to court, Andrew, the lawyer that sat in front of the three people on the bench, I used to do that job as well. So I've seen it from the three angles as somebody that advises the decision makers and as somebody that's prosecuted for all these bad, big bad councils that you refer to. So I don't know the advice you got. Obviously, I can't speak because clearly it's...
Well, the key thing, just to pick up on what you're saying there, is that you're sort of saying remain polite. I mean, I was compliant. I rented out a single family let property on a single family let tenancy. Mm-hmm. That makes no difference. You know, the facts of the matter were not of concern to the council. So as a result of that, what I've done is now routinely upgraded all of my houses to HMO standard, assuming that they're all HMOs, because I know based on experience that if one of my tenants is to sublet it, then the council will not hesitate to prosecute me for something that someone else has done. It's as if, you know, I'm being, it's like if I had a brother who got, you know, caught for stealing cars and I went to jail for it. It's as absurd as that. That, you know, this is the opposite of justice. And the idea that you can just run a legitimate business and that's some protection against this kind of behaviour by the state, it is false and farcical in my view. You know, the only way I'm now running a business which is completely different business from the one I'm running, because I'm trying to meet HMO standards in properties which are demonstrably not HMOs, because it's the only way I can protect myself from this institutionalized theft by the state.
Andrew, I completely understand your frustration, but perhaps we can have that free half an hour review. I can understand a little bit more about your business and how you run it and how to avoid things like this happening again. One thing I should say is obviously you have agreements with all the tenants, so perhaps having the clause that prevents them from subletting, if they do that, then they're out.
It's all there. You know, no, I've done nothing wrong. I had the tenant property inspected. I had the right contracts. I used a legitimate letting agent. The point I'm making is that innocence is not, it's not even approaching a defence. The only way I've discovered it, and I would recommend all landlords, you know, put integrated fire, Cat D fire alarms in all of your properties, put fire doors in all of your properties, put HMO notifications in all of your properties, because that when the state comes to misappropriate your assets, it's that kind of behaviour which will save you.
Thank you very much, Andrew. Good to get a contrarian view. Always genuinely enjoy listening to what you've got to say. Just because we've got a few minutes left, I just wanted to sort of steer us towards steer the good ship Cooper towards the rocks. I mean the port. Was going to just wrap up a couple of points which Maureen had mentioned earlier, which I wanted to clarify. So I think we've got people here today and obviously people listening to the podcast. You mentioned, and I think this is one of the biggest problems that people have, and we've only got a few minutes, so I'm sure you'll do me the favour of answering in quickfire fashion, that people misunderstand or mix together, understandably because it's complicated, building regs, planning, regulations, usually just called planning, and HMO regs, and think that those three things are the same when they are demonstrably different.
The building regulations, obviously they're the things that you have to do if you're doing any type of structural work, you have to comply with them. So speaking to somebody like your architect is always a good way to make sure that you're complying with the building regulations. That's kind of their remit. And also speaking to the building regulations officer at the local authority when you can get through to them. The architect, if you have an architect, if you're thinking of doing anything of that nature, would do that on your behalf in any event to make sure that what you're supposed to do, if you've done it. The planning aspect, again, it's a planning officer, so not an enforcement officer this time, just a normal planning officer or planning consultant if you engage with one outside of planning officer in the local authority. So they offer, I don't know what part of the country people are in, but they offer these pre-planning application things where you can speak to somebody and say, this is what I'm thinking of doing. Am I going to be okay doing it? As far as planning regulations are concerned, they can then give you the advice before you go ahead to spend any type of money doing the work. And then the HMO aspect, HMO has a multiple occupation. Obviously you need to have a license. They look at the criteria, whether you're a fit and proper person, if you're an HMO landlord. The property, obviously, if you have three or more people in there, you have to make sure that you have an HMO license, really. And if it's a large HMO, seven or more people, then of course you need a planning permission as well. So that's kind of the basics, really. Of course, I caveat things with saying each case on its own merit. One size does not fit all, obviously. Always take advice before you go ahead with anything, any kind of...
Sure, well, thank you very much. Speaking of taking advice, and to wrap up, lots of people screaming for two main things in the chat. One is your contact details.
Oh, yes. Do that now, Yogesh.
And the other is, you mentioned a sort of a guide or similar that you were working on.
I'm preparing a guide that will be ready in a couple of weeks' time, hopefully towards the end of September. So if people want to get access to it, if they could kindly leave their email addresses with you, Tom, and then you can pass them over. I'll send them to people when it's ready. I'll leave my details in the chat box now. Maureen@reenanderson.com.
Maureen's contact details, like everyone's contact details who speaks, kindly speaks on our podcast, also posted with the podcast notes wherever you're listening to it. If you look in the notes, the email address or phone number or whatever they want to be contacted on will be on there, as will Maureen's. But it'd be great to have it in the chat as well.
Okay, I'm leaving my office number, 0207-859 as well, 4451. So it's all in the chat box, Tom.
Smashing. Maureen is London-based, but obviously covers the whole of the UK, in case anyone's wondering.
Yeah. Travel everywhere.
Thank you very much, everyone, for attending. And a special thanks to our speaker, Maureen Ogdu. Tune in next week when we're going to have, we're on a bit of a run of speakers at the moment. We've got the lovely Ian Walmsley from, he's the Planning Geek, for anyone who knows that website, talking to us about all things planning. So similar but related but different, obviously, to this week.